Hi, Erin.
Gosh, it is such a pretty name. It's just so musical.
Thank you. Yes, I love my name.
And it was funny when I said, how do I pronounce your last name? Because I didn't want to get it wrong. And you said, well, it's kind of like Cinco de Mayo. And I'm like, I'm not sure I know how to pronounce Cinco de Mayo.
You got it.
Me. So, Shimeo, that Lorelai Shimeo. Oh,
Shamayo, yeah.
I have so many questions to ask you. This is going to be so much fun. Lorelai is a coach. She's a consultant. She's an intuitive eye reader. Can't wait to get into that. Body psychology coach. She also coaches on career hiring, and she's a romantic matchmaker, and she's an events producer. I can't wait to start digging. I pop back. I'm going to read you a little bit more about, oh, drat, I just dropped the page. Drat. I had this fabulous part where I was going to talk about you. So I'm just going to leap right in and say, what is an eye reader?
Sure. Yeah, so I'm an eye reader. I do eye readings. I think that actually we're all actually eye readers. We all subconsciously read eyes all the time. I'm getting a little bit of background, kind of. I don't know. Are you getting any echo?
Yeah, I am a little bit. Do you want me to send you another link when we again?
Or I'm going to be plugging my earphones here. Let's see if that does it.
Pick adjacent. One moment, please call us.
Yeah, I'm plugged in now. See if that's better.
Let me try. Echo.
Yeah, I think that's better.
Well, fantastic. God, we won't bother starting again because that's part of the fun of doing things completely and utterly live and not editing.
Great. So I was saying, I think that we're actually all eye readers. We all subconsciously read eyes all the time. We simply don't realize that we're doing it. And a way that we can tell, or at least a way I can tell that everyone's reading eyes, is that usually we choose the same types of people, the same types of eyes, the same types of good things and challenging things over and over again. So when I look at who people have dated throughout their lives, they almost always choose the same eyes. And that's why we often repeat relationship problems.
Oh, that is fascinating.
It so is. It's like it's related to our own growth lessons, our beliefs about ourselves and the family that we grew up in. And even often bosses at work, there are times that we choose the same types of bosses and the same problems. So we think that it's, what's going on, what's happening, and really we're the ones that are reading people's eyes and we're the ones that are doing it.
I completely and utterly agree about repeating patterns. I've always believed that if you have challenges in a relationship or a work environment, go deep within, work out what those challenges are, work out what the triggers are, because you will repeat those over and over. But it would never have occurred to me to notice somebody's eyes before I entered a career path or a relationship. You've just blown my mind.
Yep, I know. And so the two people that see each other across a crowded room, like for matchmaking, but like the two people that so are drawn to each other so strongly in the beginning, and they can barely see each other. So clearly it's not based on much behavior, right? They're far across a room. Those are the two people that have eyes, usually like each other's parents, and they're very different from each other. So they're each other's patterns. And I think they're actually the hardest people to be with, but we're taught that that's the model of relationship, and it's all based on seeing these things in each other's eyes. Yeah. So what I do as an eye reader is I help make this conscious. I use a set of archetypes to help people understand what's true about themselves in their eyes, like eyes are a window to the soul. So I help interpret their soul so they, oh yeah, this is so true of me. That's right. And I help them realize that there are all these different elements of who they are that are connected. There's a way of understanding it and using that to help get in alignment with their path.
Oh, that's just fascinating. Lorelai's company is thrivewise.com. Now that's thrive-wise.com. And we are going to be talking about her thrive archetypes. But just to circle slightly back to the romantic side of your matchmaking, I love that term, matchmaking.
Yeah.
It's evocative, isn't it? Your conscious online dating guide can be purchased on Etsy. Would you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. So I described a little bit of what these lessons are already. We typically are choosing people that are similar to our parents, our family of origin in some way, and that are different than us. And I think soulmates are people that have similar souls that are similar to us. And in my guide, I go through and talk a bit about this model, but also how to apply it to your online dating profile. So most of us, when we go to date, we get nervous and scared about being seen. And we go back to old patterns that worked as kids to get love and attention from our parents. So what we're typically doing in our profile, in what we write, and also in the photos that we choose, is we're sharing what our parents wanted, not who we really are. So I help people unwind that. I give them a way of recognizing what's true of them and writing more of that type of language in their profile. I encourage people to write more about their consciousness and if they're spiritual, their spirituality in their profile. And then I give tips for how to take photos that show their authenticity. I give tips for how to write to people that encourage people to write back and that get the relationship to go deeper more quickly. So all kinds of things like that.
That's incredibly useful. I had a friend reach out to me about online dating, presenting your authentic self, because also it's about attracting the kind of person that you want into your life. So you need to show up as what you want to attract. Wowza. Touch base with Lorelei on thrivewise.com with the hyphen in the middle to make sure you find out about matchmaking, because now we're venturing back out into the world. We are starting to engage in more social situations, and it's the perfect time to start meeting people, not just online, but in real life.
Yes. And they can also, people can look at matchmakingsoulmates.com, and that'll take them to a page on my archetypes website about matching people.
Thank you so much. I believe in practical woo-woo. You are a very pragmatic, you're very practical, and you're also a spacious and spiritual person. What do you mean by spacious?
I'm spacious in a way that I didn't naturally connect with feelings and emotions, and I've done a lot of my own growth work to open and be much more fluid in that realm. And I have a lot of maybe care and compassion for the human experience and the ways that we trap ourselves and get caught in our own lessons and just all the different perspectives that we have on the world. Because of my archetypes, I have like additional tools for being aware of all sorts of diversity of how we show up. Like, I'm personally queer and I've gone through all my growth lessons about that and just so many lessons of the journey of being who I am and who we are as people. And I'm able to drop into a very compassionate space with people when I work with them. So while I'm very practical and can be very results focused, I have a lot of spaciousness for being with people with really deep stuff. I have my own historical trauma. I know what it feels like to be in that and to move through that and to be caught in the various ways where it's hard to move through that. So that's some of what I mean.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm looking at a photo of you as we speak, and you have such kind eyes, speaking of eyes into the soul. One of your practical and pragmatic streaks comes from, you started off in science.
I did, yeah. I've worked in science and biology and in some molecular biology and medicine. And I've worked in intellectual property and startups, so lots of experience in business.
When did you realize that your passion was people?
Well, I think that I had some hints that it might be people when I was younger, but I call this masking, when we do what we need to get love and attention as kids. My grandmother was a huge influence in my life, and she really loved genetics and evolution and biology. And so I went into science really because of her. And I realized that I didn't really want to do lab work when I was going through college. I loved the puzzles and understanding things and understanding how life worked. And I didn't like lab work, but then I went to grad school, which is all basically about lab work. It's just kind of wild that I did this, but it was really to get this love and attention from my grandma, which I realized later. And so when I was in my young 30s, I'd already done intellectual property and that wasn't quite the right fit. It was in a startup. And so I'm finally, you know, after my own process in therapy and growing myself, finally starting to open more. And I considered going back to grad school for psychology because I'd always been interested in people. And I considered studying psychology back when I was entering college. So I think I knew I had some clues to this back when I was a teenager, but I squelched it. And finally, as I was letting that reawaken, instead of going back to grad school, I ended up finding another teacher that does a version of these eye readings. And I learned everything I could from that person and developed materials and taught with them. And then I started studying with somatic psychotherapists. And it's great. Like, why go to school? I could learn all these tools in a very practical way from all sorts of teachers that I specifically wanted to study with. And I did all sorts of work growing myself while I was learning all these tools. And then I synthesized this all together when I work with people.
It's amazing how our life experiences add up to create this incredible service that you can offer to people. Every one of your experiences added up to this.
Yes. And the big way then so deepened and integrated these lessons about dating with my own experiences. Now, I didn't realize that so much of my life, the person I married, when I finally started dating women, and I, you know, all these people that I dated, I think I counted 12 when I counted big crushes in high school and things like that. All 12 of them in a row were like my father.
Wow, what an amazing insight.
And it's, it makes sense feeling and thinking into that of like, I so loved my father. He was the ideal for me. Like I had so many struggles with my mother and I really wanted the attention from my dad. And my dad was scared of all the mess that was happening with my mom too. So I really wanted his attention. I wanted to escape all the mess with my mom. And so, yeah, I ended up choosing all these people and I was running my whole life trying to get their love and attention. And it only drew me further away from myself because they're different than me. And so I was trying to be like them and get the attention from them. So it was a journey to finally, in learning to shift my own self-love and my attractions for other people so that I could see people more like me. Interestingly, the first few people I asked out hoping to date people more like me, I ended up asking people out that were like my mother.
Wow.
And after, it was crazy, right? Three right in a row, bang, bang, bang. And like, so after all those years of trying to date my father, I was like, oh, I'm not going to spend years dating my mother again. No way. So I took a little time off and did a bit more self-work, growth work. And finally, I could start seeing people more like me. But at first I saw the ones that then didn't want to date anyone like themselves. And so it was a funny journey that I hope to, my aim is to help people through all this much faster, much more easily than I went through myself.
That's one of the great things about you having experienced all this. You will save people so much time and heartache. You'll be able to get them to where they want to go so much faster by using your own experiences.
Yes.
I joined the customs department, the New Zealand customs department, although I was an artist and an actor and a writer and a singer. I joined the New Zealand customs department because I wanted to be closer to my father. Hilarious. I lasted about 9 months before they gently persuaded me to leave because I was drawing on the envelopes that were supposed to be sending out tax forms, but I was doodling really cute little pictures on them.
Oh my gosh.
It was just not where I was supposed to be. But
yeah, you're much more creative, yeah, than that job allowed.
I feel so sorry for them. They really didn't know what they were in for. You said somatic. Forgive me if I got this wrong. A somatic psychotherapist. What is that?
Yeah, so somatic refers to the body. And I talk about that I do body psychology. So I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychotherapist. And I know a lot of the tools of psychology. And I believe that like our eyes share so much about who we are, our bodies and the experience that we have in our bodies. Also, our body is attempting to share with us so much of what's happening. So for example, when we get an itch, we think it's just an itch. But most of the time, where that itch is our body giving us a signal. So for example, if we get the itch maybe on our upper chest towards our throat, chances are we said, and we're sort of tickling the expressive part of our body. If we have an itch on the side of our face, like by our jaw, chances are we're feeling some sort of yes, no about something because that part of the body, the jaw, is connected to anger. And I distinguish between anger and aggression. Anger is yes and no and boundaries. And aggression is pushing someone down, pushing life energy down, ourselves or others. So it's often anger. It may be that we want to say yes to something. We want to ask for something that we want, or we want to say no, or we want to change something. Or if we have a little itch, like right under our nose, above our lip, that may be where we, again, are wanting to express something and we are blocking it and keeping it from coming out. And I do job interviews all the time, like helping hire people that are great for a role and for a culture. And it's fun to watch people do all kinds of body movements and things while I talk with them and see if their body movements are congruent with the types of emotions they're expressing, the stories they're expressing, or there's an incongruency. And that gives me ideas of what questions to ask to go more deeply with someone.
Oh, Did you ever read Louise Hay's You Can Heal Your Life?
I have a bit, yes.
Yeah, it's. I'm just going through that at the moment, along with a book written by an FBI agent on reading body signals. Bodies don't lie.
They don't. We generally don't have an awareness of them. We're just subconsciously expressing, and all sorts of awareness comes out that we can notice or that others can notice too. There are also other ways of utilizing our body to shift and move forward. So for example, I use a model from Katie Hendricks on four types of fear. They show up physically in the body in different ways. And there are also ways of moving the body to shift out of that fear. There are ways of saying new, you could call them intentions, but affirmations, saying a new way of believing and seeing something while we move different sides of our body in a way that shifts our neurons in our brain. That's what I believe is happening. It definitely, it's cutting cords, or it's definitely separating various experiences. So I think that where the neurons are untangling, so that they don't wire together, they don't fire together anymore. And that's a way that we can separate away from old beliefs.
Wowza. We're going to be talking about this again offline. This is unbelievably fascinating. You mentioned Katie Hendricks. You've also, would you tell me a bit about the Big Leap? Because you're certified in that methodology as well, aren't you?
I am, yeah. So again, Katie Hendricks, have many decades of work with people, and I studied with Katie in particular, and Gay is part of that for many years. I say, so which part of it are you? So I guess about the Big Leap. The Big Leap, Gay has a couple of books that are on that in particular. For me, I think of it as really like manifestation and the blocks that we have to achieving what we want. There are a few main things that how we get in our way. One of them would be an upper limit, where we grew up in a family that only allowed us to have so much success and joy and experience so much love. And we usually take those beliefs from our family of origin and we hold ourselves down. It usually comes from a set of beliefs such as like we're fundamentally flawed, we're not good enough, we don't deserve it. Others will suffer if we get what we want. So all sorts of ways that we hold ourselves back. And for me, with what I see in people's eyes, there are going to be typical patterns that, how to say, through the eyes, I can often see what some of those beliefs might be. And then there are other ways through to just discover those beliefs and again, ways of shifting them that involve some of the movements of the body, right? Yeah. So it's different for each person, right? In whatever sorts of tools and processes are going to support them and meet them where they are and help them grow.
I repeat, wowza. I want to talk to you about your Thrive types, but before we head there, you talk how you've studied applied existential psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, well, let's see. So that's Betty Cannon, who's in Boulder, Colorado. And gosh, it's been a few years. I probably won't speak to her work as well as I ought to. She does a combination of gestalt, of chair work, of people speaking to their parts, or it's imagining that there's someone else that they're speaking to in the chair. And it doesn't necessarily have to be what that person would actually say. It's their awareness inside their mind of what that person is and the internal dialogue that they have with that person.
Thank you. Click. I don't think it's quite the same thing, but I remember a friend had somebody else personify the person that they needed to talk to, and it was incredibly helpful for them to be able to say what they needed to say. I don't think that's quite what you're talking about, but I can relate to the idea of projecting so that you can having an awareness so you can have a conversation.
Yes, it's like getting things out that we have stuffed and stored inside. And then the existential part is really, and again, I'm not going to remember, the name Fritz Perls is coming to mind, but I don't remember the name of all the different people that this work derives from. Mm-hmm. But it's the two core fears of, and in my memory, it's that we'll be isolated and alone, and in that sense disappear, or that we'll be so close that we'll be enmeshed, and we'll therefore disappear enmeshed. And so those being like the two extremes of the big fears that people have. And so her work involves playing with those two and noticing those kinds of patterns in the beliefs that we have.
Oh my God, that resonates with me. Two of my values are freedom and community. And there's a fine line between codependency and community, between freedom and isolation. Wow.
Yes. Well, and if I can use this to make a leap a little bit to the I readings and the archetypes that I read in people. So you mentioned that in that previous job you were doodling. So you were doing artwork. Even if it's not, super fancy artwork, you were totally doing artwork. And I mentioned as an aside that you were just too creative probably for what that job was. And you just mentioned now that you value freedom so much. All of those characteristics are related to one trait that I bet is in your eyes if I look at your eyes. It's a trait that's called artisan, that's about freedom, creativity, pleasure, and energy. It's about sensual pleasure, awareness of energy in the space. It's about exploring the edge of what exists and bringing in new ideas and experiences for everyone. And artisans start off totally distracted and rebellious, and they don't manifest anything. And as they come to know and trust that they are the source of freedom, that freedom comes from within, they're able to manifest their own unique experience and ideas.
This is one of the very few times that I've wished my audio podcast was video. That sounds exactly like me. And I'll point out, Lorelai is getting this purely from my voice and a couple of sentences. Can you imagine what she could do if she could actually see me and
So,
my body's moving?
right. So
What?
if I were looking at you, right. So, and again, I should go pull up a photo, but I'm not going to right now. Just have this be fresh. Chances are your eyes are a bit more sparkly than other people's. Chances are your eyes actually move around more than other people's. I might be able to sense your appreciation of elegance and beauty and color and energy in the space when I, and this is where my work is a combination, right, of intuition and science. So some of those are things I could specifically physically observe, right, and that I can teach other people. And then also, I've never been trained to read auras, but I wonder if I'm picking up something like an aura. For someone that has artisan, often their energy, it's not just inside them, like inside their head, it's actually expanded out and around them. They're more diffuse. And I think of it as how they have their attention in so many places at once. I look at you.
You should see my Trello board. I different projects.
Well,
You are
artisans
so
need to have enough
fun.
diversity, right? Things need to be interesting. When they get bored, they have to change it up and go to something else. And yeah.
Yeah, absolutely creatively fluid. You are so much more fun than the Clio quizzes that I used to do in magazines. Lorelai, in her thrive types, listen to these. How fabulous are these? Scholar knowledge. Warrior efficiency, sage communication talents, growth motivation, switchable fluid defense. I mean, I'm signing up for a session. Would you please tell me about Thrive Types?
Yes, so these are the archetypes that I read in people's eyes. You started off listing some of the seven talents. There are seven. They all have lessons for how we grow to develop the best of our talents. It's what we naturally value and contribute, and how we might feel the most fulfillment. It's most directly connected to our purpose. Of the seven, people typically have three, and they come in an order of priority. So it's growing into those three, integrating them together, and growing in their lessons so that we share a cohesive expression. When we share our truth, our authenticity, we feel energized by it. So really, people don't need an eye reading. If we simply notice where we feel joy and energy and time shifts, people come to us for those things. We provide lots of value. If we simply follow that because we feel energized, we feel energy to give more and more. And unfortunately, our society often teaches us to do what's hard, to do hard work. We attribute that to have so much value. And we're actually teaching people to go against what's natural. So if we simply follow what we love and we feel energy for, I think that we'll feel more joy and create just more gifts for the world. So I'm looking at people's talents and helping them grow in their talents. And then I also look at a person's pacing or rhythm, how they make decisions, how they most easily communicate, what motivates them. We have those from before we're born. I think of those as our soul. And then I look at how we protect ourselves or our defense. That forms the first 2 years of life. So something that's so substantial that impacts us so much of our lives, the first 2 years. Super important time period. And then I'm also looking at a larger meta lesson that I call worldview, the general perspective that we have of the world. So for all of these traits, there are aspects that are natural. And our journey is to honor what's natural and relax into what's natural, come to really love that about ourselves. And that allows us to become more fluid in many of these traits where we can stretch and reach many people. And we have much, much more of the capacity of the different options in ourselves.
When I'm authentic, when I'm true to myself, when I'm being an artisan, that's when I can create world domination from a hammock.
Yes. Oh.
Lorelei, you are an intuitive soul scientist. This is just incredible. What's the best way for people to book a session with you to find out about their Thrive Type?
Schedule lorelei.com. So Lorelei's L-A-U-R-E-L-I. So schedule lorelei.com. I have a 20-minute introductory session I do with people, and they can schedule to get a full session there as well. And their photos they'll want to send me ahead of time, and great fun working with people.
I want to circle back before I forget, because I often forget about clothes because I'm so engrossed, because I have more questions for you, my darling. But you are wearing the most beautiful purple colors, and you on your photo on your Facebook page, and you're surrounded by this glorious, almost like crop circle of lavender and green. Mm. Is that the color you resonate with?
I love purple. I do. And I happen to be wearing right now, I'm wearing a purple shirt and a purple scarf, and I have a purple pen sitting next to me on my desk. Yes.
Tell me why. Why does purple sing to your soul?
Oh, gosh, do I know? Maybe I'll say just a sad thing first. When I was little, I did not know that I had a favorite color. I knew my mother's favorite color, my father's favorite color, my brother's favorite color, and I was completely blank and had no awareness I had a favorite color. And it was such a huge step for me in my life when I finally realized that I had a favorite color. It was when I finally allowed myself to really connect with me, and I knew that I had value.
You have so much value. Oh, we spoke earlier about enmeshment. Sometimes it's really hard to know where we end and somebody else begins. And I am so glad you have claimed your color, because it is a royal color. It is a passionate color. It is a, when I used to keep a time diary, I would color in with crayons, yellow when I was really, really happy, and purple when I felt at peace. Colors, mm-hmm. Colors are so important. We should all have yellow and purple.
Good. In astrology, I'm a Scorpio sun too. So purple just has this great like spiritual and intensity kind of mixture for me. I love it.
I'm going to go into astrology. I mean, I grew up on Linda Goodman's love signs. So, you know, Scorpios, incredible charisma, incredibly sexy, very magnetic people. Speaking of magnetic, it doesn't have anything to do with magnetic, but I'm circling back. I've also noticed lovely pendants you wear that remind me of Pacifica.
Pacifica?
Yeah, Pacifica means, for example, some of your necklaces look like they could be of Polynesian design, Pacifica design.
Oh.
They remind me of New Zealand, of the tikis and the fish hooks. Would you tell me a little bit about your jewelry?
Yeah, sure. So I do have a number of pendants, some of which are purple. They tend to be more like raindropish type shapes. So charwhite is one of them. I can't remember the name of the other, but I have a few different stones. And then another piece that I love, it's not a fixed piece. It's actually three pieces that are hinged together. I remember the artist was in Boulder County. I can see her. I can't think of her name at the moment, in Colorado in the US. And I saw her studio at an open studios, and she had various stones just sitting out. And I asked her if she'd ever made a hinged piece. They're just beautiful. They have a like a feminine goddess kind of shape together. It's Boulder opal. So it's the opal, multiple shades inside a brown base. And she said she'd never made a hinge piece, but that she'd always wondered about it. And so she custom made that piece for me. So we co-created it together.
Well, that's glorious. And co-creating is what you do with your clients. You co-create their lives. And
yes.
You co-create your relationships. Which brings me back to the sweet spot, which is a book that you co-created with other writers. Would you tell me about The Sweet Spot?
Yes, yes. So I think of this, so this relates to our readings and Thrive Types. So the sweet spot is that place in us. Gay and Katie Hendricks call it genius. It's that place where, like in a tennis racket or a bat, when you hit the ball, it sings. You can feel it in your body, that is just such the sweetest spot. And we often hit the ball the best way that way. So the sweet spot in ourselves is when we are engaging in the world in a way that's so true to who we are. It's easy and flowing, and we make that biggest contribution. So when I'm helping someone find their soul purpose, I'm really helping them find their sweet spot.
What a beautiful description. It's available on Amazon if you want to purchase that book. It's called The Sweet Spot, Leveraging Your Talents and Leadership in Life, and it's available on Amazon now.
And it's about those seven talents that I read in people's eyes and how we grow through those lessons, how to get the most from our talents and the most from others.
Oh, I want to get the most from my talents, all seven of them. Would you tell me about MeWe? Now, MeWe is not the app. We're not talking about the social media app. We're talking about a brief that's abbreviated for metaphysics and wellness. Would you tell me about that fair that you run?
Yes. So those are the MeWe fairs for energizing body, mind, heart, and soul. And yes, me for metaphysics and we for wellness. And also it's me and my own growth path and we doing it all together as community, where we all support each other to grow to be the best we can.
And the next one coming up is this right? November the 13th this year?
So I have events in person and I have events online. So in person, I have events in the Northwest in the US. So I think we're starting in October now in Washington State, in Anacortes and Seattle. And then we're going to be moving towards Oregon and Portland, I think in November. Yeah, so October in Washington and then Portland and Oregon in November. And then I have many events online also. So for example, I have online metaphysics and wellness fairs. I had one on Sunday. We had about maybe 65 people there, 15 practitioners, where we answer questions from the audience and then split up into breakout rooms, and practitioners give talks and are available to talk about their work and give sessions to people in private breakout rooms. I also run a lot of panels online where I'll have maybe 8 practitioners talking about a theme. Last week, Friday the 13th, we had a panel on witchcraft and alchemy. We had about 95 people there, I believe. So it's a great way that we as practitioners get to reach a lot of the community and be of service to the community. These are free events to attend. And then the panel is completely free. People can go to all these different talks and get a few questions answered for free. And then in the panels, people pay a small amount and they get to hear answers from maybe 5 or 6 practitioners. So it's a great way that we all get to connect with each other and online, so all around the world.
If I'm right, there's one coming up at the Vassar Park Resort in November. I'm going by online, so I may have it wrong. I'll double check with you, but it's only down the road from me, so I can come and meet you in person and stare into your eyes.
That's great.
I know. You had me at witchcraft.
I know. One event we have coming up next Sunday evening is a learning circle. We also now are offering essentially like classes, intuitive exercises for people to open and expand their intuition. We have practice circles for people to practice doing readings and healings on each other in a held space held by other practitioners, so all sorts of things.
Oh, that's fantastic. Did I read something about Authentic Seattle?
Yes. So I also do authentic relating work. So authentic relating is what it sounds. There are opportunities for us to be authentic and in connection with each other. Tonight, I'm actually heading into Seattle. We're having our first community event, a dinner and games in the park that we've had since all that's been happening the last year and a half. Every Wednesday evening here in the US, we have authentic relating games. So it's 2 hours together where we create exercises to explore various topics. So like one of them we're going to be doing in a few weeks is on child's play. So they're games that have us evoke more the experience of children and lean into how playful and open and spontaneous we're able to be now as adults. How much are we able to tap into what it's like being children? Or like one game we'll play, there's actually a really deep game. It's called First Word. And so we do this with a partner and we think back to what is one of those really early words from childhood. And the entire exercise is done using that first word. When we think about something pretty deep though, typically we vary the game each time we play, but typically it's thinking back to, or thinking in our lives currently now to someone, we have some unfinished business. It might be someone where we're in some sort of relationship struggle with them now, or a challenge with a coworker, or maybe someone that's left our lives, but we still feel some pain about that. And we share with our partner in a private breakout room, if it's online or sitting somewhere in person. We share using only that one word, what we want to say to that person. And so we have a chance to share and express emotionally without sharing any content. And we have a chance to verbalize and express from ourselves what we've not been able to express. It's sort of it's a modern, playful way, really, of doing the gestalt, actually, that we talked about with Betty Cannon and applied existential psychology. So these are playful games that we do with each other that allow us to be authentic and in connection and still have versions of like corrective experiences in a more playful way.
That's incredible. It reminds me of theater sports meets therapy. It sounds fantastic. Yeah.
So some of the people that are facilitators in our group in Authentic Seattle also teach improv and lead improv. So very much it's a combination of these things. I say, and one of my colleagues and I, all the last year and a half, have been leading deep dives where we usually just do drop-in games. And for the deep dives, we have 6 weeks at a time with a closed group. So all sorts of opportunities for people to connect in safe spaces with each other.
I was going to say, you really create safe environments for people to express themselves. I spent most of my elementary years wanting to either be a superhero or a horse. So read into that what you will.
A superhero or a horse? Well, so I would not be surprised if one of the other talents that you have is called priest or priestess. It's about inspiration, vision, passion, motivation. It's about wanting to support people using emotions to stretch and reach towards their purpose, their potential, and to get into alignment around a goal. And I mention that right now because, one, you do all these uplifting recordings for people, of course, but horses are particularly sensitive to, I'm losing my words here, but they're very empathic in terms of emotions. They read people's emotions so subtly.
They really do. This was a time when I was going through something I was a bit sad about, and it's very soothing to sit on the back of a horse and cry. I thoroughly recommend it.
Yeah. Horses so realize what's happening with us. They often reflect it back to us and play with us with our emotions in ways that we haven't even been able to face them yet. So I know they're used now a lot in therapeutic contexts. And then superhero. Well, you don't want to play small. You want to play big.
I always wanted to be able to fly. I always thought that that was definitely, you know, who doesn't want to basically crank up the window like Peter Pan and basically just fly out a window?
Not everyone does, actually.
Really? Really?
I don't. I think it's related to your desire for freedom. You don't want to be limited by being stuck on the ground.
No, I like heights. I really like sitting on roofs and on skyscrapers. But this was so incredibly joyous and fun. I was tired when I started the interview. I feel so energized, so heard, and so seen. And I can't wait to meet you in person. And if you feel comfortable, because I always ask, give you a great big hug.
Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's just wonderful to have you. Thrive-types.com or Lorelei Shimeo. You can find her on LinkedIn. You can find her on Facebook. There was another couple of website links you had, which will be in the show notes, so you can book to talk about online relationships. Did you want to send that link out again?
Maybe, yeah. I want to say the link that'll get people to all of them is LoreleiShimeo.com. So that's LoreleiShimeo.com.
And remember, if nobody wants to hug, elbow bumps is always a good way to go, and a refusal never offends. Thank you again, Lorelei. This was such a treat.
It's been lovely being here. Thank you.
Bye.